Hey guys, I hope you're doing well. Brian Reynolds here. You're listening to the Appraisal Update podcast, and sometimes we have challenges. Some of us have more challenges than others. And speaking of folks with challenges, just kidding. I want to bring in my good buddy and business partner, Hal Humphreys. Come on in, Hal. How are you doing today?
Challenged.
I have a feeling you're going to get me back here in a minute, but how's everything in Hal's world? What's happening over at Appraiser Relearning, Appraisal Buzz, all that good stuff you juggle day to day?
You know, it is fantastic over here at Appraiser Relearning and Appraisal Buzz. Had a really interesting Buzzcast interview today with a lady who was involved in climate science and the mortgage space, and she has some really interesting things to say about the impact on value of rising insurance costs. Pretty interesting conversation. There's a conference coming up next month on the 18th and 19th in DC about that, and if you want to find out details about that, go over to the Appraisal Buzz and check it out. It'll be up in the next week or so. Other than that, life is pretty good over here. You know, Brian, one of the reasons I wanted to kind of do this abbreviated podcast for the Appraisal Update podcast is, you know, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and a lot of clients are really asking appraisers to show their work, not just say X, Y, Z, but show your work, show your work, show your work. And I don't think that's a horrible thing. But there are times when we have to make estimates on, for instance, depreciation or remaining economic life. And, you know, USPAP, I think you're pretty clear on this. USPAP says we can't just guess at these things. You know, I know sometimes you go in and you're working in a la mode total and you get to the remaining economic life and you just kind of change it to make the numbers work out. And there's some that would say, well, that's sensitivity testing. I think that may be partially true. But what I wanted to ask you is, if an appraiser walked up to you today, someone challenged like me, and said, Brian, I've got some good sales, but I don't remember the math on remaining economic life and depreciation from the market, how would you explain that to someone?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and we get questions often about how'd you get that, right? For instance, you know, if we look at a bathroom, right, we can look at one bathroom and look at a house with another bathroom, and they are not exactly the same, right? One looks a little different than the other, and all things are not considered equal. And so historically we've asked appraisers, well, where'd you get that adjustment? Or where'd you get your opinion of remaining economic life, right? And we hear quite often, well, years of experience. In other words, that's my opinion. Yeah. We understand that's your opinion. What are you basing your opinion on? And we hear years of experience. I was at a conference and I made everybody say it, years of experience. And then, Hal, I brought a slide deck up and I said, now say this, never say that again, right? Because if you just say years of experience, it really, and let me premise this. If you're an appraiser out there and you have years of experience, I'm not trying to degrade that or belittle that. If you've done your job and you research the market and you're an expert in your market and you have years of experience in doing that, I tip my hat to that. Thank you for your good work, right? What I'm focusing on right now is the cop-out answer, where you're asked a question, you don't know the answer, and so you brush it off by simply saying, I've been doing this 40 years. It's years of experience. That's not good enough, right? So to answer your question about support for your remaining economic life, if I'm asked about that, my response is I reach right down into the marketplace and I pull it out of there.
How do you do that?
Oh, okay. Well, I thought you might ask that. Before I do that, let me tell you some answers I've gotten when I ask that same question to practicing appraisers around the country. I say, what's your number? And I've heard a lot of different numbers, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100. In fact, I have appraisers write it down on a piece of paper, Hal, and then I go around the room and I read the different answers, and we get all kinds of different answers. So I think it's going to be very difficult or challenging for you to argue, well, I'm doing what my peers are doing, because quite frankly, your peers are all doing something different. And so then I said, well, you're using 65. We've heard that number a lot, or 60 or 70. Now, here's the real question. The question really isn't what's your number. It's where did you get that number, like you just asked me? And I've heard many answers over my career. I got it from my supervisor. Well, great. Where'd your supervisor get it? Well, they got it from their supervisor. We can't ask them where they got it because they're dead. I have some appraisers just be brutally honest and say, Hal, I guessed. I plucked it from the air, which is another technical term for guessed, right? It's what my peers are doing. No, it's not. We just demonstrated that. And of course, I hear, well, it's just my opinion. And of course, based on what? Years of experience. So standard rule 1-3 of USBAP says that an appraiser must avoid making an unsupported assumption or premise about market area trends, effective age, and remaining life. How'd you get that remaining life? So we're going to talk about it. First, we need to understand what is depreciation. So what's depreciation? Well, we hear a lot that depreciation is a loss in value. And I hate that. I mean, how while it can be a loss in value, it's not always a loss in value. Let me give you an example. What's it cost to put a pool in your area?
Let's say $20,000.
Oh, that's a cheap pool. And what does the pool contribute?
I'm going to use the standard appraiser answer and say it depends.
Yeah. Just give, well, this is hypothetical. Just give me a number.
10,000.
10,000. Okay. So the pool costs 20 and it contributes 10.
Yeah.
Is there depreciation? Yes. 50%, right? It costs me 20. It contributes 10. How much has the pool lost in value? And wait, before you answer that, the pool is worth 10. It's always been worth 10. How much value has it lost? The answer is zero. Hasn't lost any value. It was worth 10 a minute ago. It's still worth 10.
All right. I see where you're going. So cost doesn't equate to value. We know this. What if, I'm just going to throw this out there, it costs me $40,000 to put a pool in the backyard, and it's a super nice pool, and it actually increases the value of the house by to $50,000 more. So you've got the $10,000 difference, but it's an increase in value. How do I deal with depreciation there?
I don't have any depreciation in that example. I have appreciation, right? I hit a home run in that. That's what we hope for when we build houses. People say all the time, the cost approach tends to set the upper limit of value. And I don't believe that. How many of you have built a house? The day you moved in, did you think it was worth less than what you just paid for it? I mean, I hope it's worth a little more than what I just paid for it. Don't you? I mean, why would anybody build a house ever if the day you moved in, it lost value, right? So the real definition or the part of the definition I like about depreciation better than a loss in value, and it can be a loss in value, but what I demonstrated by that pool example is the definition of depreciation isn't always a loss in value. What it is a difference between cost new and the value today. So depreciation is the difference between cost new and the present day value. So let's take that for a minute and figure out the answer to your question, remaining economic life. I'm going to do a little math. Are you ready?
Yeah.
So let's pretend for a minute that, and you're going to look at a lot of sales, right? You're going to analyze several comparable sales and then reconcile that to get your number. But right now we're going to use one comparable sale. So here we go. Here's a comp. It sold for $125,000. That's a fact. It sold for $125,000. We're going to take out the land value. So in this example, the land value is $25,000. And we're gonna say that also includes depreciated site improvements. Okay. So what's left? If you take the sale price of $125,000 and you take the land value plus depreciated site improvements out of $25,000, we have $100,000 left, which is the implied value of the improvement only, the house. All right, we're trying to figure out depreciation. A moment ago, I told you the definition of depreciation was the difference between cost and value on the same day. We have the implied value of the improvement only. Now we got to figure out what the cost is. So in this example, cost new to build that house would be $115,000. $115,000 cost new minus the implied value of the improvement only of $100,000 gives you $15,000 or accrued depreciation. Now, how this is all forms of depreciation together, rolled up into one, right? We know that there's physical, functional, and external, and that's another podcast. We'll dive in deep on that, okay? But right now, the accrued depreciation is $15,000. And ladies and gentlemen, the market is telling me that the depreciation is $15,000. Now, all I got to do is figure out what the annual rate of depreciation. So I take depreciation.
I'm gonna jump in real quick. So we've taken the sales price and we've deducted the land value and depreciated site improvements. And I don't want to dive into this too deep, but just to clarify, land value we got from the market as well. We analyzed land sales, found out what that lot is worth, whatever, and take that out. Now we're down to the $100,000 implied value. Where did your cost new come from?
Wherever you get it now. So you're already doing a cost approach. If you're taking that out of a published cost manual, if you're getting it from local builders, wherever you're getting it now is where you get it for this.
Okay, so you do a cost estimate on the comparable so you know what that would cost to build today.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. So whatever it is,
a 1500 square foot house by whatever it costs per foot, you know, wherever you get your cost data now, you're using for this analysis.
Okay. So once we get that, we get down to 115 cost new, $100,000 improvement value implied by the math you did in the first step, you got $15,000. I mean, all right. So I got a $15,000 depreciation. How do I get to effective age?
We're almost there. We're almost there. Remaining economic life.
Remaining economic life, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to take the total depreciation, which is $15,000. I'm going to divide it by the age of the home, and that gives me the annual rate of depreciation, $2,143, if I'm doing the math right. And what that's telling us, ladies and gentlemen, is that this asset, this improvement, this house in this instance, is wasting away at $2,143 per annum. Now what everyone's sitting there thinking is, come on, that's implying what we call straight line depreciation. That's implying that the house depreciates the same amount every year for however many years, right? You're correct, it does, but it might change. You do this same analysis next year and it might tell us something different, right? That's why you can't just do this once and use it forever. So right now, as of today, the market is implying that the improvement is wasting away $2,143 per annum. All I got to do now is take $115,000, which is the cost new, and divide it by the annual rate of depreciation, in this case, $2,143. And that gives me a life expectancy of 54 years. Now, we just did one. We did one comp and it told me 54. We're going to do more than one, right?
Okay.
And we're going to get different answers. So in my example, the first one was 54, then I got 55, then I get 60, then I get 55, 65, then I get 57, I get 100. Ooh. And then I get 60 and I get 55 and I get 35. And then what you're going to do, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to reconcile those. Maybe I take out the outliers, the extremes. Maybe I focus in on this group that were the most recent sales, right? It's your judgment call, which is the sharpest tool in the appraiser's toolbox, by the way, is good judgment. Don't ever forget that. But you're going to reconcile that and say, okay, well, I'm going to come in at 55. That's my opinion of the total life of this property, economic life, right? Total economic life. And that's something I can hang my hat on because everything on that yellow screen a moment ago was taken from the market. Every number on there was extracted from the market. That's how I get my total economic life.
And that's how you do the same math on a number of properties and you get a range of depreciations. You get a range of annual depreciations that you can then take that market-based data and apply it to your subject for a supported estimate of depreciation. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. And if we really want to just keep going, we could argue that maybe that's a condition adjustment too. Again, that's another conversation. You're wearing me out, Hal. I'm giving away my service here.
Well, what I wanted to do was just a real quick question of, you know, I hear appraisers all the time talk about remaining economic life and expected economic life, those kind of things. And how do I do it? And a lot of the times the discussion ends up, I just change it in the form until the number, you know, lines up. And yeah. Look, this is a recognized technique out of a textbook. It is accepted methodology, and it is support based on the market. And that's what I'm looking for, just a tip or a trick that we can share with our appraisers, you know, and maybe we do this, I don't know, once a month. We come in with me asking a stupid question and you answering with a really good answer.
You know, about best I can. Here's the thing. If you want more information on this, I mean, Tim Anderson, Scott Cullen does regular webinars at Appraiser eLearning. They're packed full of this type of thing. Scott's got software that will do this or help you do it. There's many others out there. I know Brent's got some great techniques. Steve Kahan. If you haven't watched some of these webinars, guys, do yourself a favor and check it out over at appraisereLearning.com. It's a deeper dive in this conversation Hal and I are giving you today.
Brian, thanks for taking the time to answer my silly question, but I think it's a useful thing for us appraisers to keep in mind that the math out there is pretty simple if we just take the time to slow down and do it. I really appreciate you walking me through that process.
Listen, if it was hard, Brian Reynolds wouldn't be able to do it. I promise you that. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Appraisal Update Podcast. Thank you, Hal, for jumping in and asking a tough question. I'm normally the one asking hard questions. So a little turn of the tables there, which was fun. We'll definitely have to do it again. Until next time, stay safe, make some money, take a little mini vacation. I'm going to the mountains for a few days myself after USPAP tomorrow and try and just unwind and relax a little bit. Until next time, happy appraising.
LIA Administrators and Insurance Services, serving valuation professionals since 1978. We provide E&O insurance with a commitment to superior customer service, outstanding liability education, and unmatched claim defense, benefiting over 10,000 real estate professionals nationwide. Visit liability.com to discover how LIA can safeguard your business.
The Appraisal Update Podcast is brought to you by Appraiser eLearning.